Welcome to Inclusion Matters, produced by the Center for Inclusive Childcare,
aka the CICC.
We're located at inclusivechildcare.org.
Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast of the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Cindy Croft, Director of the Center, and I'm here today with Priscilla Weigel, Inclusion Consultant for the Center, and our guest today, Dia Anderson, who is our Inclusion Coordinator at the Center for Inclusive Childcare. Welcome, Dia.
Thank you.
And we're going to continue our discussion around the pyramid model. In our last podcast, I explained all the work that you've been doing in Minnesota around the TACSE pyramid model project. And so I won't go into all that again, but we really thought maybe it'd be interesting for you just to kind of describe what the pyramid model is. You already talked about the foundation, and we spent a podcast talking about how important it is to have a professional, the workforce that is really well skilled and knows what they're doing, prepared.
Mm-hmm.
So after we take that for granted, then we assume that's in place. Mm-hmm. We want that in place. So then what does a pyramid look like?
Well, there are three tiers left that are built on that foundation. The first tier consists of two different parts. And the first part is building positive relationships. We know that, you know, from the very time that an infant is born, they are programmed to be in relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their survival depends on those caregivers feeding them, changing them, making sure that they're being stimulated socially.
Listening to their cues.
Right, yes. You know, answering, you know, quickly responding to those cries. So mm-hmm. it's that really attentive and responsive caregiving from the very beginning, and the relationship is just the whole foundation of that. When we do training related to building positive relationships, we talk a lot about attachment and attunement, and we also get into some talk about different temperaments. We know that everybody's different, and you know, a child's temperament might not always fit very well with the caregiver's mm-hmm. temperament, but that then it's the caregiver's responsibility to, you know, do what they can to still meet all the needs of that child and sort of readjust their temperament to that of the child. And, you know, the relationship piece is really what's going to help that child know that, you know what, I can count on people in my life. I can ask for help when I need it. It just gives them that safety and security that is so important for all of us.
Sure.
I think as people are listening in the early childhood and school age fields, I'm sure they must be thinking, once again, what our hope for them is, they're thinking, wow, I have such an important job. And I know sometimes in the day-to-day you start to forget just because you're so busy, but that relationship is really everything.
Sure. It is, and I think, you know, I think one thing that we have to ask ourselves, you know, oftentimes is, you know, can I sit down and remember the names of all the children that I work with without looking at a list?
Oh, that's good.
Can I tell somebody else one attribute about that child? I think we need to challenge ourselves to get to know those children and to be able to share that knowledge with parents, with other staff mm-hmm. that are going to be working with that child in the future. But I just think we have to know those children, and it takes an intentional effort sometimes, and especially with some children more than others.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to know those kids, and we have to know them to really know what they need, to know their strengths, and to be able to work from there.
Great.
And I love what you said about the temperament, too, because mm-hmm. I think sometimes we forget that every child is wired differently. Every child has a different temperament that's uniquely theirs, and sometimes that can really affect just our level of positivity, that connection.
Right.
And if we know what's going on with that child and how they tend to thrive, best.
Right.
We're going to meet their needs.
So in the pyramid model approach, we're looking at relationship. Then what?
Then it's designing supportive environments. So then we look at not only the physical aspect of the environment, but the social aspect of the environment too. With physical aspect, we're talking about room arrangement and the number of toys that you've got. Do you have enough so that every child has access to toys? Are they labeled so that they know where to put them away, and also so they get that idea that a picture and letters relate to one another, and that all relates to eventually learning to read? And then the social aspect, we're talking about consistency, routine, being predictable in your schedule and in your responses to children.
Mm-hmm. Good. That's important and a good reminder for people as they're doing their work. To sometimes people think, I've kind of forgotten that part about going over the schedule every day.
Right.
But
right.
Now I realize once again, that's a part that does so much to build a child's
right. I think that especially
pieces.
I know that picture schedules are very popular these days, but one thing we have to remember is that just hanging it up on the wall is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you have to teach how that picture schedule works.
Mm-hmm.
And you teach it every day until they've got it down pat. Then maybe you don't teach it as much until you get a new child.
Right.
And then you start all over again and you involve the other children in teaching that child a schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So that then they too, that's another social emotional piece, is learning that they can help and reach out to other people.
Sure.
I know I was in a classroom once and we were doing a checklist for the environment, and one of the things we were looking for was the rules, and they had classroom rules, but they'd covered them up with a poster for something, and they'd forgotten about it, you know. So even though they had classroom rules, they hadn't been going over the classroom rules with regularity, and they were even covered up. So just sometimes you need another set of eyes to help you remember, because you are busy, and there's so many benefits in the small things that prevent the big things from happening.
Right. Yep. And we know that these are the foundation, and these things have to be in place before we can move up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then where are we moving to?
Then we're moving to the second tier, which is social emotional teaching strategies.
Mm.
And that's really about being intentional about teaching social emotional skills.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those skills, some children are going to already have them, but some children aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our job to teach them those skills. And those skills include things like emotional literacy, which is understanding that they have emotions, being able to verbalize those emotions. And it's not just cognitive knowledge of those emotions, but I also think it's important to help them link them to what they're feeling in their bodies.
Mm-hmm. Instead of just screaming?
Yes, yes. because... you know, lots of times we get disconnected from our minds and our bodies, and sometimes our bodies are telling us, or you know, our minds are telling us things through our bodies, and usually our emotions start in our bodies first before we really even recognize them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also understanding that other people have emotions.
What an idea!
Yes. And that's all part of just building the beginning piece of empathy.
Sure.
It also involves friendship skills, so teaching them how to be friends. And another really fun aspect of it, too, is, or that can be made really fun, is just problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
It's teaching children how, rather than if they're arguing over a toy, rather than the teacher or caregiver coming and taking that toy away and saying, well, I guess you can't play with that now, we'll put it up on the shelf. It's teaching them to problem solve.
Right.
We've got a problem. What are some ideas? How can we solve this problem?
Sure.
Good. I think it would be interesting to note here, too, that while there are really great social curricula out there, it's also a matter of intuition on the teacher's part and experience in making activities and each interaction intentionally about, oh, here's an opportunity to talk about a feeling or to bring in cooperation or talk about sharing. So sometimes a curricula can make people think, oh, we pull it off the shelf and now it's feelings week or whatever.
Right. I was just going to share that when I first started teaching, I remember having a week on feelings. And when I think about that now, I think, wow, where was I coming from? Because feelings are always there.
Right.
And they're so important. They really drive what we do, who we are. And I think if we really focused on teaching children those social emotional skills, that the world might be a very different place.
Wow. Yeah, we can certainly agree with that.
Right.
So then we get to the, are we at the final tier?
We are. We're at the very tip of the pyramid. And that's what we call individualized intensive interventions. And that's for children who are really exhibiting some challenging behaviors. Just, they really need support. Just being successful in their environment. And often that involves doing something that's called a functional behavioral assessment, which is something that we usually need to have a team to do. But I think one thing that we just as providers can do on our own is to really focus on the idea that behavior is communication. And there's a function, there's a reason, there's something that child's trying to tell us through their behavior, and our job is to put on our detective hat or miner's hat or whatever hat you want to put on, but to figure out, what is this child trying to tell me? What's the function of the behavior? Is he trying to get something? Is she trying to get out of something?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe there's a sensory aspect of the environment that's making the child uncomfortable. So it's sort of, it's just kind of really just digging in, you know, going back to how well do I know this child and how this child ticks.
Mm-hmm.
And then looking at the environment again, what skills does this child have? What skills does this child need? Those are all part of that intensive focus on that one child. And the interesting thing about the pyramid is, too, that you know, we often think that we need intensive interventions for so many children, and really it's a very small percentage of children that really need that.
Those other pieces in place.
Exactly.
Excellent. Well, this has been fascinating, and I'm sure for people listening who want more information, we can refer them to the www.challengingbehavior.org site.
Yes, and that has links to the other websites that are associated with the Taxi Pyramid Model.
They can also contact you at the Ask the CICC or Ask a CICC Consultant, so that's helpful as well. And we encourage listeners to contact us if they want more information or if they have feedback on the podcast.
Oh, definitely.
We love to get feedback.
Yeah. And in Minnesota, the Child Care Resource and Referral Networks will either beginning this fall or in January, we'll be offering a series training called Taxi Foundations. And it's really geared towards family and center-based child care providers in just helping them to understand and utilize the pyramid model.
With a coaching component.
Yes,
there is.
There's a coaching component with that, too.
Great. Well, thank you both again. This has been wonderful. And thank you all that are here listening. And we'll be back with some more information the next podcast.
Yeah, great.
That's all for now. See you next time.